Today is Saturday, February 21st, 2009. This is LTUE, Editing Do's and Don'ts.
So, editing. Some people aren't here. We've had a couple of additions. So, this is Roger and Linda, Stacy, and Scott. And we'll tell you about editing.
So presumably I'm here to be your moderator because let's start with the panelists introduce themselves and give their brief bio on why y'all should listen to what we have to say. Start from. Okay.
Cool. That's it.
I like that.
Okay.
Anyway, I'm Roger White, and I write for White World. White World is my website. I've had that since 1994. I have been interested in technology pretty much all my life and have done a lot of pioneering work. I was one of the first people to open a computer store in Utah. Personal computers as in back in the 1970s. I was also the 20th person hired at Novell. And this is way back also, about 1980 or something. And so all through my career, I have faced the issue of here's a technology. How is it going to help people? How is it going to make our lives better? And in the early part of my career, I did some very tangible technologies. And later in my career, I started saying, I've been writing real science fiction about products that don't exist. And decided to move from that to classical science fiction about worlds that I was creating. And so that's my background in science fiction.
I'm Linda Hunter Adams, and I just recently retired from teaching, editing, and publishing here at BYU for 30 years. And when I came, we had one student journal. When I left, we had over 30 student journals. The Leading Edge being one of my favorite, long-lasting ones. I've been the advisor for Like the Universe and Everything for 25 years, at least. I ran the Publishing Institute for about 10 years from McGraw Hill, and set up a Humanities Publication Center here so that I work with publishers all over the world and in all kinds of fields.
I'm Stacy Whitman, and I'm a science fiction, fantasy, children's and young adult book editor. I actually started out on the Leading Edge when I was here at BYU. I was at Wizards of the Coast until last August and edited people who were in this room. And now I'm freelancing. I'm looking for my first book to acquire for Tor as a... my cold is really getting the better of me. What is the word? Consulting editor. I need a nap. And I also work individually with authors doing critiques and community classes. I have more information on that right here.
My name is Scott Parkin. Like Roger, I've been involved with technology for a few years. I'm a former editor of Leading Edge. I've worked in the Linux Humanities Publication Center, worked with the State and Seven State Publications, some of the other publications on campus. I've been technical editing. Both for textbooks and for technical books out of the field. I've also functioned as an acquisitions editor as well as other things. So I've had quite a bit to do both from the writing standpoint, from the grading standpoint, and from the more technical standpoints around the arts and sciences of editing in the real world. Not so much with fiction publishing as with other things, but also with. So, starting at the top of that, we've had a couple of different types of editor described right here. Can Ben talk a little bit about, when we say editing, there tends to be this sense of my personal editor at the publication, but in fact there really are multiple types of editors working in a given place, from an acquisitions editor to a copy editor to a content or a story editor. Can you talk about that at all? Or?
Well, I think a lot of people, when I say I'm an editor, they think I'm a copy editor. They think that that's what I do, that I fix grammar and I put in punctuation that's missing and stuff like that. I do that as a service for publishers now as a freelancer. I do copy editing and proofreading as, you know, another way of making money as a freelancer. But what an acquisitions editor in a publishing house does is acquire, hence the word acquisitions, acquire manuscripts, say, yes, I'm going to buy this, and then work with the author, starting with the big picture, all the way down to what's called line editing, which is more your sentence structure and where your paragraph should go, should the sentence be deleted, things like that.
Editors work, if you have a small company, you might just have one or a few editors. If you're with a big place like McGraw-Hill, then you're going to have a real hierarchy of a lot of different editors. The editors will work from acquisitions, acquiring the manuscripts, deciding what's going to be published, working through helping get that in a form that is marketable. So they work a lot with the marketing area, and they work on overview, organizational, substantive editing, down to copy editing that they describe. And then editors will also be involved with deciding what illustrations go with it, layout, design. They work with the designers, and often the editor will have a big say in whether or not certain aspects of design are used and so forth, and the marketing. So, and then they work with the typesetters, and then through the proofreading to the bindery, all the way to get the book out on the shelves. And there's a lot of different areas that you can go into with editing.
The thing about being an editor in a fiction publishing house most of the time is that you are a project manager. You're the one who says, I want to acquire this project, and so you're the one who has the vision, and you're the advocate for that book in the house. So, say I want to acquire Rebecca Shelley's book, and I say to the publisher, I really love this book. I think this is going to hit the market in this and this and this way. I think I envision the cover being this and this kind of cover. And then I would be the one saying to the artist, let's do this, and saying to the copy editor, when it's time for it to be going to copy edit, here's the manuscript, something like that. So I'm shepherding the book through the process.
Thursday, I'm editing the Pioneer magazine right now for the Sons of Utah Pioneers, and I went with the layout person to the Daughters of the Pioneer Museum, and we went through all kinds of collections and photographs and paintings and different kinds of things to get an idea of things to work in the layout and so forth. So you can be really hands-on from all of the stages with the editing.
In the editing that I've done, which is brief, one of the things that I spent a lot of time on was helping the author understand what was understandable, and more important, what was not understandable about what they were writing. So, particularly in the technology area, why you're going to get an engineer who knows what's going on but doesn't really know how to say it well in print, or you're going to get a writer who knows how to put it in print but doesn't know what's going on. And as an editor, why I was kind of a bridge, my usual function was to ask, you wrote this, what does it mean? I don't quite understand, let's try to rephrase that. That was the kind of thing that I did.
So just a quick poll of the audience, I'll give you a second. How many here are concerned about editing from an author's standpoint? How are you concerned about editing from an editor's standpoint? Okay, so we have to leave this split here. We can't focus on the
Darn you!
I think anything we talk about can be applied either way.
Yeah, absolutely. But you do approach a little bit differently, right? Because I think many authors, there's kind of this popular misconception among many, especially aspiring authors, who haven't actually worked with an editor. Somehow the editor is the enemy. Somehow the editor is the gatekeeper who's keeping you from being published.
Or who wants to change your precious prose.
Right. Who wants to destroy the work that you've spent your life slaving over. And this is just my impression, please correct me if I'm wrong, but what I know of editors, both as one and working with editors, is they're looking for an excuse. They want to want your project. They want it to succeed because they don't want to be involved with that which is not marketable. Now, part of the problem is what you've written may not work. The editor may or may not have time to work with you. That's a different issue. It depends on how you're working with it. It depends on the project you're working on. But the editor is there to help you succeed.
The editor is there to make your book the best story that you can tell. The editor is your partner and your advocate within the house. They are your, I mean, it's you and your editor against the house. If you're anything. You know, it's your editor who is your ally, who you can go to when you say, I'm concerned about whatever issue. Can you help me understand it? And that editor is just like your agent, and sometimes agents and editors are in an adversarial role, but everybody has the same goal, to make that book be the best book that it can be and to find as many readers as it can.
So we have a question over here.
Well, this is probably going to show my ignorance, but I'm glad you brought up agents, Stacey, because at what point, so you have your story written, you're sending it out. At one point, I mean, do you send it out to your agent? When do you bring in the editor? Is the agent the one who sends you to whatever editor? I mean, what is the flow of the process?
Since September 11th, most large publishing houses are closed to unagented submissions. So unless you've met an editor at a conference. So, for example, if you come to BYU Writing for Young Readers, there will be two editors every year who will say, for a certain time period, and they'll make up their own, you know, requirements for a certain time period, and you can submit to me if you've been at this conference. But generally, most people, even in children's literature, it didn't used to be the standard, but even in children's literature nowadays, need an agent to be published with a large publishing house. A smaller publishing house, at Mirrorstone, we never were closed to unsolicited submissions.
Dave Overton was just saying in the last session that science fiction has pretty much moved over into that area now. It used to be open or unsolicited submissions, but you really need an agent, particularly nationally. Locally, if you decide to publish with a Utah publisher, smaller presses here, then you probably don't. But the Utah market, a bestseller out of some of the publishing houses here sell just as much as a bestseller nationally, because we have a very strong niche market here. That's not doing a Daniel Steele or a Stephen King in those, but just a regular book published in New York. You can do just about as well here. You just need to see who's your audience and how it will be marketed. But if you're going national, you really need an agent.
Just as a follow-up question, I'm so sorry. So I'm sorry to keep harping on Stacey. I will appreciate everyone up there. But you said that you're acquiring, you're in to acquire a book for where you're working now as a freelancer.
I'm a freelancer, which means I'm not working anywhere except for myself. Okay. But I was at Mirrorstone, and the thing with Tor, and you might find that, because Brandon Sanderson's editor is a freelancer, Tor works with a lot of freelancers, and I get contracted on a book-by-book basis. If I can convince them that, yes, this is a great book, they'll contract me as the editor.
So do you work with the author's agent in order to acquire the book, or
yeah.
Do you work with, okay, all right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Functioning basically as a middleman between the publishing house and the publishing.
Basically, think of me as an in-house editor who isn't in New York. York, because I do all those things, but only on a contract or per book basis rather than as a salaried employee.
Just a good question about contracts. So you work as a freelance editor for Tor. So when do you actually write the contract with the author? Is it when you've sold the book to Tor and they've hired you and contracted with you as the editor?
I don't write the contract. Tor writes the contract, and then they contract me to be the editor.
Oh, okay.
So just to comment on that, right? Because
this is actually unique in the industry. Tor is the only one that I know of that does this.
Yeah, because that's part of the thing. Is the person who's going to help shepherd the creative work is not necessarily the person who's going to do the business with you. Now, the project editor is the person who hands off the contract paperwork, but frankly, it's not part of their job that they really care for.
The editor is the negotiator as opposed to the one who comes up with the contract.
And that's the thing, because that's where there is that adversarial set, right? Instead of making the deal. But you need to, as an author, you need to separate the deal from the creative work and understand that those are two entirely different parts of the process. And don't hold your editor's feet to the fire because they have to represent the interests of their company. Understand that distinction and separate them.
That's one thing that you need to understand thoroughly is that publishing is a business. And they're in there to make money. And a well-established publisher sometimes will get a manuscript and they'll look at it and say, this is just too wonderful to let go by. We know we won't make money on it. We'll pick up money from some other projects. But most of the time, books got to stand on its own and the marketing department has got to say, yes, this is going to pay for itself. Even if it's wonderful, they can't do that, they won't come.
So, as an acquisitions editor, how much of the work you do is as a business person and a negotiator, and how much of it is working with the author and the text?
Most of it's working with the author and the text. When I was at Mirrorstone, I did 10 books a year. So, I did 10 negotiations a year, and the rest of my 40-hour week was done. You know, I was either working on the book itself, like being nitty-gritty in the text, you know, or I was in meetings talking with marketing about how we were going to package the book, or I was at shows marketing the book personally, working the booth. So an editor is basically a Jane of all trades in the publishing house, but whatever it is that I do, it, you know, usually is getting people to read the book or to make the book better.
In a large publishing house, the position she described might each be a different person.
True. I was one of two editors in the house, and we had one marketing person. So I got my hand in a lot of PR that most people probably wouldn't.
And again, this is important to know, right? As an author, there are separate, they have to a certain degree compartmentalize your activities there. There's a time when your work is a property being exploited by the market or for the market. There are times when your work is art to be developed as such. And you need to understand separation because your editor does understand that separation. And again...
So we have, you know, several different parts of our brain. Okay, I'm going to put on this hat now. Actually, whether you're a writer or an editor to be or an editor currently, these are two books that you should know and love. If you haven't taken the editing classes here at BYU and you're a student, you should be, because they're awesome. I was actually an English major, and I just kind of took them, and that's how I know about that. Editors on Editing, was that the 340 class?
350.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it's now...
350,
yeah.
That's... They changed. Do they still use this text?
Uh-huh. Yes.
Because it's an amazing book, and it's a book of essays on editing in various... industries. So it's got children's books, it's got adults, it's got nonfiction, fiction, all sorts of different viewpoints in this book. It's really good. And this one is written by an agent. I don't know if Noah Lukman was ever an editor as well, but he really knows the editorial side of things. The first 5 pages is about submissions and about crafting your work, and this is a really great book on craft.
What's the name of that?
This one is The First 5 Pages by Noah Lukman. And the other one is Editors on Editing, which is a book of essays edited by Joan Gross.
One thing that I want to just emphasize that has been said, though, is everybody, once you get an acquisitions editor and you get adopted as a book, everybody wants you to succeed because it means that the business will succeed. And so everybody's on your side, on your team, and they'll go out of their way to make it as successful as possible.
Good question over here.
Yes, in a lot of the sessions they've been talking about getting the fluff out of our writing, and we understand that an editor kind of helps out with that, sometimes getting rid of the entire chapter that we shouldn't have written in the first place. How much do you think we expect, maybe as a percentage on average, of losing our work? Like, so if we're looking for a page count, do we need to try to write up?
You can't quantify that kind of thing.
I realize you can't quantify it.
What, so individual per book. And sometimes it might, if an editor wants you to change your book so substantially that it becomes a different book, you might have the wrong editor. I mean, that does happen. But I lost my train of thought. Did you guys want to say something?
I have one comment on this process. I find that the process feels a lot different depending on the supply and demand of content and content producers. When I was producing technology books in the early Novell era, it was very easy for me to produce a proposal and get it accepted. And that's because there were only a few thousand people who knew about Novell and NetWare at that point. But there was huge demand. So the editors would say, "Oh, you're warm. You can spell Novell. Bring me a book." And it was fairly easy. Now, in the science fiction market, where there's a whole lot of producers, and not so many publishers. So the balance is very different.
And that brings me actually to a point that I lost earlier, that right now, with the market being what it is, and how many hundreds of thousands of people have gotten laid off in the last few months, I have talked to editors and agents who say that their slush piles have gone up significantly. So, slush pile, that just means their submission pile. I'm not really quite sure where the history of the word slush comes from, but think of a mountain of manuscripts, and it's probably... Editorial Anonymous does, it's a blog of a children's book writer, and she used the example, the metaphor of think of your kitchen table and then put a stack of manuscripts on it. Think of this table and put a stack of manuscripts on it and then multiply that all the way up to the ceiling and then fill the rest of your kitchen with those manuscripts. And that's probably about what an agent might get in a year. And there's only so much time in the day, and we're real people who have to have lives too. You know, we need to clean our bathtubs and have a social life, you know, stuff like that. And so it's important right now in this current economic climate to, number one, have a lot of patience. It'll come back, but have a lot of patience, because every major house just laid off a whole bunch of editors. And so all the rest of those editors are being dumped upon with currently contracted books that have to get out somehow. So their work has doubled, and their submissions have doubled. I'm just throwing out a number. I actually don't know the number, but a lot of more work is being heaped upon smaller and smaller numbers of people. Yet at the same time, now is the time to be writing your book, because if you finish it in a year or two, guess what? The economy will be better. You know? Don't say things like that. But, what was I going to say? Yeah. Write your book now. And if you're submitting right now, be patient.
So along those lines, there's this idea
I just want to make one other comment before you go on with that. Because of this situation, I think it's even more important that you start looking at contests to enter, which then can help your manuscript stand out if you win contests. It can help you get an agent because they'd rather work with somebody who's getting a track record. Go to, as Stacy mentioned before, go to conferences like this, meet editors so that you're a face to them and not just one
professional. Yeah. Don't stop them. Just be a professional.
Yeah.
So the subtitle of this panel was Do's and Don'ts. And I think this is one of the first important things, right? As you finish your work, as you go to conventions, as you meet editors, because it is to your advantage to do so and to present yourself well to them as a professional. That means, among other things, if you're pitching a book, that you've got your elevator pitch, right? Your 15-second quick hit, right? Elevator pitch means, right, what you're giving in an elevator on the way up to
the time. You have the time from the first floor to the 10th floor.
Then you have your 30-second pitch. Then you have your 2-minute pitch. Everything after that is much more one-on-one than happens, right, with the assistance of lawyers. So you need to be prepared, and that's where books like this are going to help you out, right? You make it every chance for that editor to give you the benefit of the doubt out of the box. That is your job as a writer, is to be prepared and to be a professional and to have your stuff set up and ready to go.
And to know your business.
Right. And to know your business.
Because you are a business person. And when you're done writing the book, when you're done revising, when you're done editing, your own editing stuff, then you switch into business person mode. And so you as a writer are just as split as your editor is.
Right, that's the thing, you have the different roles. So
have your manuscript as clean as you can get it. Manuscripts that aren't set up to look attractive, looks make a lot of difference. Some the editor looks at the page, if it's sloppy, if there's cross-throughs, if they see misspellings, then that's not a good impression to make. So, and do it on their own computer. Jeff?
Yeah, I was just had a question that's along these lines with the editions. How much, like, as an editor, does the editor look at it and say, okay, this is going to be like 11 revisions to clean this up. I'm not going to take it. Or I think I could just one quick revision, this could go out. You know, how much do you look at that and say?
You're thinking in quantitative terms.
I know.
Editors don't take it.
But I've heard editors talk about it because they look at it and they say, this is just too much work. And so how do you know how much work you should put up front as an author before
as much as possible.
Yeah.
The cleaner it is, the less.
I want to read you two paragraphs, if I can find them really quickly.
So while she's doing that,
I found them. this is just from the introduction to the first 5 pages. He says, many writers spend the majority of their time devising their plot. What they don't seem to understand is that if their execution, if their prose isn't up to par, their plot will never even be considered. Agents and editors often ignore synopses and plot outlines. This is exactly what I do. Instead, we skip right to the actual manuscript. If the writing is good, then we'll go back and consider the synopsis. If not, the manuscript is discarded. A great writer can produce an amazing piece of writing with virtually no plot at all. To underline its relegated importance for the blah, blah, blah. But, of course, and I will add to that, you can fix plot, you can't fix voice as an editor. And so usually the editors who say this would take too much work are probably saying, I don't know how to teach you voice. You need to learn that yourself.
And that's a hard thing to hear as an author. Maybe you aren't ready for prime time yet because you don't, frankly, write well enough, sentence by sentence. You may tell a great story, and that's where we start to have some of those odd mismatches, right? Is when manuscript or publisher that write those passing stories seem like they're written by a third grader with a crayon. But that's because the story was that good, we had to pick it out, right? And in that case, if you're hoping to catch lightning in a bottle, that doesn't happen very often. better the quality writer of sentences as well as quality teller of stories. So along those lines,
but there are storytellers and there are word crafters.
Right.
If you have at least a modicum of word crafting and you're a great storyteller, awesome. But I often get things in my submission pile that should have been workshopped for, that shouldn't have, maybe this is your Trump novel and you should go on to the next one. You know, there's a process that, you know, sometimes authors don't know themselves because you're too close to it. And so that's what writing group or beta readers, alpha beta readers, you know, those kinds of people, your trusted people who you feel like have a very strong sense, not just they love you and they'll say the book, but you in particular, but everybody, that somebody that trusts will be honest and say, this is a problem with it, maybe this, maybe that, and give you suggestions that
give in your writing group somebody, as many as you can, who will tell you the truth. Don't just send your manuscript by your wife, by your mother. Your mother loves you anyway.
Your children, you are in a position of power over your children. Your children love you anyway. Sometimes you have children who will, you know, fix it for you, but it's important to also take anyone who is close to you, their advice with a grain of salt.
And a writing group, you can run, read your manuscript, work on it, come back to them. They can tell you if it's improved and so forth. And you can do that workshopping before it goes to an editor.
There's someone with a
question over here.
All right, my question is kind of on becoming an editor. Right now, or up until a few weeks ago, I was editor-in-chief of a newspaper, and I want to move over to the book world. How do I do that?
not right now.
Yeah.
The timing is not good.
Should I go to New York and wait tables and hope patiently that the economy will get better, or what?
I think getting hired locally and having some experience in that field locally and then moving to New York is a lot better. There's just too many.
I haven't moved to New York.
Never?
No, never. And I was going to move to New York after I got laid off, and then everything went south. There's no way I'm living in New York right now, honestly. I can't afford it, and most people can't. But you should be there generally if you're trying to break it. But the market right now, I mean, they're just... I've had several interviews where they said, we love you, we're trying not to fire people. So, I mean, there are editorial assistant positions where if you're willing to start, I mean, I did a lateral move from trade magazines, but I got a master's in children's literature. I mean, basically you get as much experience wherever you can and be willing to work for nothing.
And the trade magazines is a better route to go right now than the book industry. They're not hurting as much as the books are.
It depends on
which magazine.
Well, it depends on which magazine. It depends on what industry. Because if you're talking about manufacturing has been hurting for about 10 years. So, which is the editing. That's where I used to edit. So, I will just tell you a quick synopsis of, okay, my entire career in college, I edited phone books, I edited for Mel Thorne here at BYU in the Hub Pub. I started out typesetting college textbooks in Unix, actually, my sophomore year of college. And basically, the entire time I was in college, whenever I could find something, and it started out as, I'm good at this, it'll be my student job. I was animal science pre-med. I wanted to be a veterinarian. But eventually I realized that I could put them together, and when I started being a book editor as a goal, I just gathered as much experience as I could, and each job led to the next one. My job that I got, I graduated in 2001. That was also a slumping economy. I couldn't get a job in book publishing at that time. But I went actually through the phone book A through, you know, A to Z, and I call all these publishers and I said, are you hiring right now in Chicago, where I was at the time? And Barks said, yes, we're hiring. I only got to B, yes, we're hiring. And they hired me as a publishing assistant, and I worked my way up and I got a lot of experience. And then I went to grad school and worked in educational publishing while I was in grad school, and I did an internship. And so there are all sorts of different opportunities that you can, but you have to, I mean, nobody goes into this, even writers should not be going into this for the money. There's not a whole lot, I mean, the J.K. Rowling's of the world are a million to one, you know, and, or one in a million, actually, not the other way around, you know what I mean. So you have to be willing to work for nothing for a while.
Questions, actually, one I'm hoping will be a lot faster than the other next. My first one is, what is the difference between an alpha reader and a beta reader? And my other question is, I heard a story once, I don't remember where, about somebody who approached, I think it was actually an agent, right? It could be a head towards editors, and they said, oh, I recently heard that you won this award, and I recently heard you were working with this person, tell me about that. And then the agent talked for 20 minutes, and they said, so what do you do? And from there, the author was able to pitch the story, but because they had taken the time to research out the person, they were a lot better off. What publications can we follow? What websites can we watch to get an update on the industry, to get this is what's going on, this is where we're slumping, this is what you need to watch out for?
Publishers Weekly does a daily email for every single genre out there, including cookbooks. I don't know why I'm getting... Or is it? No, I think it's Publishers Watch doing the cookbook one. For some reason, they put me on the mailing list for it. I don't know why. Publisherslunch.com, or is it publishersmarketplace.com?
Publishers Lunch. You can search for Publishers Lunch.
Publishers Lunch is the newsletter. Publishers Marketplace is the website that has, you know, if you subscribe, they have more content. Publishers Weekly, and they have daily and weekly emails for different genres as well. Editorial Anonymous is a great, she's editorialanonymous.blogspot.com is a great resource for children's literature. She's like Miss Snark for children's books. Miss Snark has archives, and if you don't know about Miss Snark, you should definitely check out her archives. I have a website, StacyLWhitman.com, at which I link, well, actually, you go to my LJ, which is kind of a mirror site. I have a lot of links. I'm still working on building my website. But I have a lot of links to editors who blog, agents who blog, and authors that I know. And if there are so many people out there in the blogosphere who are daily, like Kristen Nelson is an agent who blogs, and she really knows the business. I don't remember the agents. Her email web address, but if you go to my website, you can probably follow links and find her. But there are agents out there and editors who blog who you can learn a lot from. It's basically a master's degree on the web now, you know, but you can learn so much from just surfing on the web. And, oh, and if you're in children's books, the essential websites are scbwi.org, Society of Children's Book Writers and Illustrators, so it's scbwi.org, and underdown.org are two basic websites where they have a lot of links to other things on the web that will give you a lot of information.
And again, it's for authors, right? It's again, be prepared, but also then put yourself in a position to meet these people to get that advance notice. You tell a story about the, you know, talking to the editor. I have my own story. I went to WorldCon in Los Angeles. Went to a panel of the major book editors. John Douglas, the senior editor of Harper Book, Harper President of Harper, was on a panel. Afterwards, I walked up and said, hey, thank you for your time. That was great. He turned and walked away. He said, so are you a writer? I said, yeah. He says, are you writing anything? So I'm not a moron. I said, yes. Have you got anything to submit? Sure. He pulls out his card, writes his secretary's number, name and number on the back, and says, call her, let her know it's coming, and I'll let her walk it straight through your name. Okay? Now, if you take the time, if you present present yourself well, if you understand that you are a product as well as your manuscript, you can get that first touch. But having gotten that first touch, you better follow through.
And I think that bears repeating that editors are people, agents are people, and so if you show interest in them as people, as professionals, thanks for that information, that sparked an idea, what do you think of whatever professional topic, you know, just, you know, whatever conversational topic that it started, that starting a conversation is so much more approachable than, hi, here's my manuscript. You know, I don't know you from Eve. Who are you? You know, I'm trying to run away now.
Demonstrate yourself as a competent, capable human being of independent worth and value. Then get your nomination.
And the reason why we keep stressing this is because I can't tell you. So Editorial Anonymous had this great, she answers questions from time to time, and she had a question of someone who said, I don't own a computer, can't I just handwrite it? Now,
yes, if you want to throw in the
yes, you can. You are perfectly capable of it.
Well, and her answer was priceless because she said, it's certainly possible, but you have to understand that most of the people who send in submissions like that are either incarcerated or children. So do you want to be classed among those people? You know, and that's a much more stark example, of course, but presenting yourself as a professional helps editors, and at given the numbers that we were just talking about, helps editors to sift through the people who aren't serious.
And make yourself a good blog that you keep up to date. In the last session, they were talking about a woman who just started out sending a quote of the day to people. And she got her list up to 11 million people that she was sending a quote of the day to. Well, when she pulled together her quotes for her quote book, there's 11 million potential customers. And where you can tell a publisher you've got a market, then you're a way ahead also.
So we hear a lot about how tough the market is. And of course, there's always been book doctors and people of questionable review about the industry. But it seems to me that the industry is shifting a bit now toward a little bit more of that virtual life where you may contact an editing service legitimately first. Is that true? Can you talk about that?
Contact me. I don't know how many, given that we just talked about Publishers Weekly, I don't know how many of you already follow Publishers Weekly, but there's been a lot of coverage of Nomlos, which is a new editorial imprint that was started by Stephen Roxbury, who used to run Front Street Books. And he, basically, a lot of his editors followed him when he left the company. And he started this company that, if he weren't Stephen Roxbury, you would probably think he's a scammer, because he does these services, charging the author directly. But I think it's, and what he was saying in the interviews that I've seen, he's like, the thing is, publishers have so little time to focus on craft anymore, that this is a way of helping those authors who are publishable get past the hurdles of having someone who really knows and is an advocate for the book. It's just, I'm torn. It could be another layer, or it could be that thing that makes it that much better. And the thing about what they're doing is they say, we'll do up to a certain point, and if we think that it's not publishable, well, we won't work for you anymore, even if you want to pay us. And what I do is I actually will either critique your submission packet or your full manuscript, and my services are very similar, where I will tell you where I feel it fits in the market, and this is the thing that you need to change if you think that, you know, if you want to write for such and such a market, or perhaps it doesn't fit this market, that kind of a thing. And they can be a really, especially in this, there are niche publishing markets where it might be useful to be self-published. Family histories, a local history, things like that, where if you insist on self-publishing, it can help that side of things. Or if you are getting rejections from agents and editors saying it's not quite there, it gives you some idea of, well, maybe this is what can get it there.
So can you distinguish between the old bad book doctor and the new legitimate editing service?
People who have been at legitimate publishers generally tend to be the ones that know what they're talking about and have connections in the industry and can say, wow, I think this would be a great book for Cricut or for some other publisher, an actual book publisher, not a magazine. I need a nap, definitely.
But that's part of the thing.
But like I think...
Publishers Weekly and being familiar with your market and players in it, right?
Exactly, because then you can... And when I first saw it, I thought, huh. But then I thought about it, and really that's what I'm doing when I'm offering critiques of a lot of editors who are laid off, who have been in the industry for a few years, do that, you know, they'll do critiques for pay for people who feel like I do need it and I'm willing to pay it and I actually have the money for it. It's not necessary, but sometimes it's useful.
So our time is nearly done. I'd like to just open it up for one last question.
Perhaps a question on being an editor, because we've been talking a lot about the ranks and things.
At this point, I want to have a question.
Hmm? No, I'm holding up the recorder. It's hard to hear you.
I have one, but it's not on that topic. It's all right.
Sure.
Okay. Well, would the panelists like to make a final statement? Or,
you have a hand.
I think there was a question earlier, and I don't know, maybe I missed it, but the alpha beta readers, what is that exactly?
Yeah, we didn't. Alpha beta readers are the first and second. Your alpha readers will be the ones that give you feedback after you've workshopped it, and after your alpha readers have looked at it, and your beta readers will put in your final look before you send it to your editor or your agent.
Which, for anyone here who works in software or technology industry, you're familiar with those ideas, right? So.
I'm wondering if the career path gets to be in copy editing is different from the traditional editing.
Yes and no. copy editing, you can take a copy editing course and get certified in copy editing. You get to know a certain style manual and get certified in it. Or you might have, like me, been working at a publisher or in publishing. I've been in publishing since 93 at this point. I've been in publishing for a long time, and I know several different style manuals, and I've been working with several different publishers, so I can say to my publishing contacts, hey, I'm going freelance, do you have any copy editing? So copy editing and freelancing in general, you have to have, it's all about networking, and it's easier once you've already worked in the industry. But there are people that I've used as copy editors who only do that, as far as I know, have only ever done that. But they tend to be the ones who take copy editing courses.
One other quick suggestion. Publishing houses have a certain amount of editors for the amount of work work that they have. And right now, as we said, that is a little less. But there are periods where they have more work than they have editors, and so getting on as a freelancer with a publishing house, just calling various publishers and asking if they freelance things out, most places do. And what you need to be very careful of then, if you get a manuscript, you do what they tell you. You don't do more than they tell you, because sometimes if they just want a copy edit or a proofread and you start editing, then they've got to check all of your edit stuff and you slow them down. So you do what they tell you and you get it back on time. Being on time is just really, really important in publishing. But if you go and do it right, you'll get more. And I know people who make their living just on freelancing. They haven't connected themselves with one particular publisher.
And the thing about getting on with different publishers as a freelancer, it's best to call an editor and say, hey, are you open for freelance copy editors right now. And they will either say yes or no, and if they say yes, they'll probably have you take a copy editing test and basically prove you know what you're talking about. And if you do know what you're talking about, then you probably would. I want Scholastic's roster and Marshall Cavendish's. Scholastic, in the last 6 months, has not actually called me ever for a job. They probably got a huge stable and just haven't gotten around to say, oh, yeah, let's try out a good person. Marshall Cavendish, I happen to know an editor at this very small company pretty well, and she's like, oh, yeah, and I saw her several times in the midst between, where I was like, oh, yeah, send me something anytime. And so she finally did it 4 or 5 months later, and I did my first picture book, showed them, yeah, I really do know what I'm doing, and my next copy edit was immediately the most detail-oriented thing that they had, because they knew that I would be the right person for that job. So basically, it's a matter of connections and then proving yourself.
Keep in mind that publishing is changing the law. The internet has come, and the ways of reaching people are constantly changing at this point. You're seeing that in the sense that some of the old traditional companies are suffering. They're suffering, but publishing goes on. So keep your antenna up for other places, other industries, or other aspects of industries where something is in demand. And the way, how do you tell if it's in demand? People are asking for it. They say, can you do this? And so keep an eye out for that. I'll give you an example of one that I ended up with. And that was a friend of mine that I had worked with years before, called me and said, we're doing these technical videos. And the technical, I would look at the technical videos, and what I would do was write questions so that there were some printed word questions available for the technical video. And that way, the people that would watch the technical video would then pop up questions if they put the evidence on the video. Well, that was writing. It was publishing. It wasn't young adult. It wasn't science fiction. I was getting paid well to do it. That's the secret. I was getting paid well to do it.
Yeah, as far as he said, those I want to add to that. Those are very good ideas. If you think publishing is just book publishing, then you're really narrowing, if you want to go into editing, you're really narrowing down. There's magazines, businesses have editors, big companies, like when you go on an airplane and you see their magazine, that's got editors. There's website editing, a whole lot of electronic.
Educational,
textbook.
Textbook publishing is still
going. And it will still stay because we still have the school, so that's one that's not going to suffer as much. But there's just a whole lot of areas and kinds of editing. Don't just narrow yourself to one.
So unfortunately, our time has passed. We're now 5 minutes to the hour. So we're going to call a halt to this. I'm sorry. There were two questions over here. If you want to come up and talk to the panelists afterward, that's great. Or if you want to go ahead and do it now, but I want to let people know that our time has passed. There is reception at 8 o'clock, free of charge. So if he has a paper or anything, do some awards, get a chance to meet people, invite you to participate in that. Thank you very much. Thank you, panelists.